United States of America is the greatest country in the history of civilization. And at warp speed, we are also about to achieve peace in the Middle East. The stock market is through the roof. It's at an all-time high. Gas and energy prices are plummeting. California is still cheating in their elections. Boo. Elon Musk is a trillionaire. Congratulations, Elon, and all of the probably millions of people that he made a lot of money.
He's bringing so many jobs to the American people. He's bringing hope.
Washington, D.C., you look marvelous. You look fabulous. Crime is down in D.C. People are safe.
Again, the leftist wants to demonize Trump no matter what he does. And future, even Democratic administrations will benefit from the ballroom as well.
On Friday, the USA beat a very strong Paraguay team 4-1. Many people speculating that the United States is going to win the World Cup for the first time in history.
Folks. On the sand, this train waits for no one. Either keep up or step off.
But 47 is kicking ass and taking names. Hi, I'm Dean Cain, and welcome to the Homeland here on Proud American Studios, where we discuss all things truth, justice, and the American way. Well, as I've said before, and I'll say it again, the United States of America is the greatest country in the history of civilization. And wow, so many incredible things are happening right now, and they're happening at warp speed. I am so excited for this episode where we get to talk about all the things that are happening. And I am energized. I am extremely energized. I'm always optimistic, but I'm very energized right now. And speaking of energized, the Energizer Bunny himself, also known as President Trump, turned a youthful 80 years old on Sunday, had a huge UFC event right there on the lawn of the White House. It was also Flag Day. Now, it's currently Monday. This is the day after all this happened. So he was at this insane UFC event until like 1 o'clock in the morning. Then he went and jumped on a plane at about 3 a.m. And he flew to, I think, France and then Geneva for the G7. He's making deals. He's doing all kinds of stuff. When does this man sleep? I mean, honestly, it's crazy. Now, we also had America. America won the World Cup opener on Friday, won their World Cup. They haven't won the World Cup yet, but they won their opening game on Friday. So we're also about to achieve peace in the Middle East. The stock market is through the roof. It's at an all-time high. Gas and energy prices are plummeting. California is still cheating in their elections. Boo. Fraud is being exposed on the systemic level. It's unbelievable. Elon Musk is a trillionaire. Congratulations, Elon, and all of the probably millions of people that he made a lot of money over the weekend and today, and will continue to make people a lot of money for a long time. He deserves it, and he should not be denigrated for that. He should be celebrated. Also, if you weren't aware, the United States of America is about to celebrate its 250th anniversary, birthday, whatever you want to call it, in grand style. Okay, so I'm here today with Mike Kiselniak, a career law enforcement officer, handsome, very handsome man, and a retired member of HSI, which is Homeland Security Investigations. For you who don't know, DHS. All these acronyms. It's amazing. And of course, Trey Lindsay, a SEAL Team 6 operator and a red, white, and blue American patriot. Who could kill me with his feet? And I hope you don't. Please do not.
We're friends here, Dean. You have nothing to worry about.
We're good. So. It's rare that I'm in a situation where I'm hanging out with a couple of dudes who can just murder me. And so let's hope it doesn't happen. So there's so much going on here, gentlemen. So much positive news that I almost don't know where to begin. But I'll start here. The most consequential and my favorite president of my lifetime, just ahead of Ronald Reagan, who I had the opportunity to meet. It was amazing. Donald J. Trump turned 80 years old yesterday on Flag Day, and I flew my American flag, as always. I fly mine all the time. But American flags are and were everywhere. It's so great to see. That flag is a symbol of so much for all of us. Mm-hmm. I can't even start to get into it, but it's great to see that. It's not a symbol of awfulness or terribleness, as the left likes to say often. So it's a symbol of pride. But President Trump turned 80 years old, but he's incredibly hard working, unlike, of course, our his predecessor, Sleepy Joe. He was at the event, like I said, till about 1 a.m. Then he jumped on a plane at 3 a.m. He's in Geneva at the G7 making deals. We've had so many cabinet officials already on this show on the Homeland. If you missed them, you can check it out. We had Lee Zeldin, the administrator of the EPA, acting Attorney General Todd Blanche, who hopefully will soon be the Attorney General of the United States. He's doing an unbelievable job. We had HHS Secretary Kennedy on, Maha, Make America Healthy Again. How can you argue with that? Head of counterterrorism, Dr. Sebastian Gorka, who's a very tall man and a good friend of mine and a great guy. We had drug czar Sarah Carter with us in Dallas. That was amazing. And to a person, every single one of these cabinet officials, and I spoke to Secretary Hegseth about this at length, he continues to display incredible energy on a daily basis. Now, Trey, I'm going to start with you, if I may. Mm-hmm. As a SEAL Team 6 operator, very handsome one at that, by the way, who put his life on the line for this country so many times, what are your thoughts on, you know, the American flag being honored and proudly displayed, as it always should be, and the UFC and all the events that are going? What's going on? I'm super excited. I hope you're equally excited.
You know, absolutely, Dean. It's just the matter of like pride I see, you know, when I look at the American flag and really just think about the sacrifices of the blood and, you know, sweat, everything else that service members alone, let alone other hardworking Americans, you know, contribute every single day to make this the greatest country in the world.
Well, you've lost friends, I'm sure, and you've got to deal with the flag. And when they fold that flag and hand it to a grieving widow or children, I mean, that people have the right to denigrate the flag, but I think they fail to realize the sacrifices, the real sacrifices that are made by so many, including you. So God bless you. Mike, what do you think about all this? Patriotism? Is it patriotism overload, or is that even possible?
It's not possible in my world, that's for sure. You know, and I echo what Trey said. You know, the flag is a symbol of this country. It's a symbol of honor and pride and all the men and women who have sacrificed their lives and given their lives for us to be able to fly that flag and for us to have the freedoms that we do have in this country. I'm big on the Pledge of Allegiance also in the mornings, you know, trying to bring that back into the classrooms. A lot of teachers have in schools have done away with the Pledge of Allegiance. And to me, it's a travesty. We need the pledge back in our schools. We need it. You know, these kids standing up every day, showing homage and honoring their country and pledging to that flag.
It's weird because I grew up saying the Pledge of Allegiance. And you know, well, and to the Republic, not the democracy, the Republic for which we stand, one nation under God with liberty and justice for all. That is amazing. Kids should learn it. They should understand it. They should appreciate the freedoms that they've been given by people like you guys. It's awesome. And I would love to see that back in the schools. I would love them to understand that. And so we'll see if we can't get that done.
Absolutely.
We're working on it. Washington, D.C., you look marvelous. You look fabulous. It is gorgeous. The president is getting it cleaned up and beautified. It looks remarkable. Crime is down in D.C. People are safe. Folks are noticing Union Station, where you pull in there from New York or other places. Unbelievable. Gorgeous. Benny Johnson, a friend of the show and a friend of mine, and he tweeted something through there, walking through how gorgeous it is. You see all these people posting online about how gorgeous D.C. is. All our landmarks are getting cleaned up. The water's flowing. You know, yes, we redid the reflecting pool at $14 million, I think it was, versus Obama's $34 million disaster. Nobody complained when Obama did it. Why are they complaining when Trump is cleaning up D.C.?
Yeah, I mean,
why?
Didn't Trump, if I remember correctly, a few months back, maybe 6 months ago, send all the federal agents to D.C. to clean it up?
Oh, yes.
You know, and look at now
National
we're starting
Guard.
To finally
yeah, National
see,
Guard was a big one, too.
Yeah, we're starting to finally see, you know, the impact of that, which is great.
It's unbelievable. You see all people are posting all the time about how gorgeous it is. And, of course, it's coming right up to America's 250th birthday. Great timing. Yeah. Great stuff. Tremendous, tremendous momentum right now. So I love it. What about the ballroom?
I'll defer on that one. Yeah.
Well, from a security standpoint, let's talk about the ballroom for a second. I mean, President Trump just had an attempt on his life, the third, where a guy ran through where the White House press correspondents dinner, he ran through, which were some security lapses, let's be honest. There's no question about it. Had you been there, I don't think it would have gone the same way. But I mean, the ballroom, he doesn't have to travel. It's in a fixed location. They had the UFC fight there last night. From a security perspective, as somebody who would be on a roof, and there were guys on roofs, how important is the ballroom? I think it's hugely important, not just from a security
perspective, but from like, you know, they put tents on the South Lawn, and they'd have to put them up and set them up and take them down. And it's just so Bedouin-like. Not that I'm denigrating Bedouins. I've actually had the opportunity to stay in Bedouin tents in Jordan, and it was amazing. But I mean, we are the United States of America, the most powerful country in the history of mankind. What's wrong with a ballroom there that is gorgeous and safe and et cetera, et cetera?
That we're going to have other heads of state attend. And again, the leftist wants to demonize Trump no matter what he does. And being very short-sighted when they do that, because future even Democratic administrations will benefit from the ballroom as well. So why would you not? Why would you want to have like the safest, most secure, nice place to host the heads of state dinners and things like that and events? So again, it's the double standard. It goes to show you.
So just strictly from a security perspective, he doesn't have to leave the White House grounds. Mm-hmm. You guys know everything about where he is, what's there. Mm-hmm. The communications are solid. There's no getting in and out of a car. All the magnetometers and all those things or whatever. I mean, how much easier is it if you had to protect the president in the ballroom versus going to, say, the Hilton where that horrible event took place?
Oh, it's a night and day difference. I mean, that's obviously, but we had like the ballroom when it's done on the actual White House grounds. I mean, it's probably probably the most fortified place in the world. All the countermeasures and everything else we have, barring any, God forbidding, attacks against the president or members of Congress. So
It's unprecedented.
Yeah.
And then there's the whole underneath part, which has all kinds of other
escape routes.
Bunkers and all
that. I think when the Democrats went to sue and all that stuff was kind of came to light, was this going to be like completely just flying under the radar, which is what it should. Our adversary should not know what type of security measures we have. But of course, when they filed a lawsuit to stop the construction, what happened? Okay, now they had to reveal more of the actual plans themselves for the ballroom.
Which is unfortunate because the security is not something you need to be sharing. Mm-hmm. Unbelievable. So Washington's getting cleaned up. It looks incredible. We're going to be out there. We're going to be out there in a couple of weeks. Cannot wait for that. But let's go to the next thing. The World Cup being played in the United States at 11 different locations. Also Mexico, 3 locations. And Canada, 2 locations. On Friday, the USA beat a very strong Paraguay team 4-1. It was a resounding victory against a very good team. They beat Brazil and some other teams. So it has many people speculating that the United States is going to win the World Cup for the first time in history, I believe. I don't think have we ever won it?
No.
Okay, I turned to Mike because he was a soccer player. Right. Not that we call it football, but the rest of the world calls it football. But I'm not picking on it. It's a very beautiful game. And we're in Las Vegas, by the way, so I did bet on the United States winning the World Cup. I had to do that. It's legal here. It's
I may have
thing.
Done that as
you
well.
You may have done that. Trey, you're the only one who hasn't bet on the United States.
I don't know soccer.
You communist.
So, I'm kidding.
No, I don't know it very well either. It's a beautiful game like hockey. Mm-hmm. The Golden Knights just lost here in Vegas, which is a bummer. Congratulations, Carolina. Mm-hmm. But so, Michael, on the World Cup soccer, you know this better than any of us sitting here. Am I jumping the gun to say that we could possibly win it?
I don't think you are. If there was ever a team that could win it, it's this year's team. They came out with a powerful 4-1 victory over Paraguay on Friday.
They looked like they were just on offense the entire time.
They were moving the ball great. They were, They just looked like a team that was set out to win this World Cup. They really do. They have some tough challenges coming up. Australia on Friday is going to be a tough game. I wouldn't say they're top team, but they're solid. And then Turkey after that, which is another decent challenge. Then they go into the knockout rounds after that, where they start facing the real challenges of Spain, France, Argentina, Brazil. Those are the
perennial
historical like powerhouses in the World Cup. But to bring the country together like that, I was in Boston actually for the night of the game.
And the game was played in Inglewood in California.
Yes. Yeah. So we went to an outdoor watch party in Boston, and there were hundreds and hundreds of people. They did the national anthem at the beginning of the game. Everybody stood up, hats were all off. People were silent at attention. It was a great thing to see. And then the cheering in the game, and the morale for the U.S. team, and watching them score the first couple goals. I have video of it that people were going crazy. It was such a great electric environment to be in. So I'm excited for the U.S. I'm excited for the men's national team. I think they have a real great shot this year. So.
Now they got 3 points out of that, right?
Yes.
Points, 3 points is a difficult thing to come by early on.
It's big. And also the goal differential is big too for passing on to the next round. So they got it done in good fashion the other
so you like you don't want to so if you get ahead in those games you don't want to just take your foot off the gas
correct
because yeah. it goes to goal differential and all that other points and things like that. Sure. I mean Germany scored like 7 goals on
yeah.
somebody
well yeah that
Curacao was,
that,
I think they played.
Curacao right that this is their first World Cup Curacao and it was exciting because Germany came out and scored that first goal and then Curacao
answered
came back with a goal and the whole world was stunned and the Germans were the most stunned like holy shit this, these guys are yeah. like a tiny little island and this is our national sport
legit.
And yeah it was pretty cool to see but then Germany just poured it on they're mm-hmm. such a powerhouse team and they just absolutely destroyed Curacao but it was exciting to see that goal though
the German they said oh scheiße Nah, right?
I mean, what a time to be alive. What a time to be American, more than anything. 250th birthday coming up. World Cup we're hosting. One win after the other. So
President Trump's
great time
birthday,
to be alive.
Flag Day. I mean, it's. I'm feeling very red, white, and blue these days. And I'm super, super excited about it. Because the World Cup is here. And people are coming in from all over the world. And they're experiencing the United States of America. Now, mainstream media loves to poo-poo the United States of America, but these regular everyday Europeans are cruising through middle America because we're playing games in California and New Jersey. Yeah. Where else are we playing
Boston,
games?
Boston, that's games, right. Texas,
yeah,
Dallas,
Fort Worth
right,
area, out of Arlington.
We got
yeah.
11 spots in the United States, and yeah. people are shocked at how gorgeous the United States is. They're so mm-hmm. shocked. They're not just shocked about our sports facilities, which are top-notch. We didn't have to build any new ones for this or anything like that. They're just flooding through America. They're appreciating the American part, the amazing parts of America that we take for granted. But we do take it for granted because we are, you know, used to seeing it with our amazing sports teams, NFL, our MLS stuff, everything about it. But the American American hating outlets like The Athletic, which is part of the failing New York Times, and others have been writing about how problematic it is to have the USA host the World Cup because we are just a terrible, awful nation, even though the last couple have been held in – it's every 4 years, if you're not aware, mm-hmm. that we have the World Cup. And in 22, it was in Qatar
yeah.
or Qatar. And Russia
yeah.
in 2018, then South Africa was in 2010, Brazil in 2014. Brazil has kind of gone down the tube with what they've done with their judicial stuff.
Yep.
So what is with this self-hate? Why do like outlets like The Athletic want to poo-poo the amazing facilities and the incredible parts of the United States?
It's no different than their policies that they believe in, too, Dean. Like left-leaning, no Democrat policies. They want to hate America, unfortunately. I don't get it. I don't understand. Like we talked about before, you know you live in the greatest country in the world when people talk about how much they hate it here or hate things about it, but yet they refuse to leave. But when we have foreigners coming here to watch the World Cup, what do we have?
Lucky
bastards. Yeah, they're like, oh, this is phenomenal.
They love this country. I saw more men in kilts in Boston than
yeah.
they
yeah.
Well, Scotland
was yeah. playing, yeah.
And they won.
And they were wearing kilts all weekend, you know.
Yo.
I told my friend, I said, you know they don't wear underwear under those.
I was going to ask you that question. That was the next question.
I don't know.
A true Scotsman.
Yeah.
I was going to say, can you confirm or deny?
There's no knowledge.
No
here,
knowledge then. Whatsoever. No knowledge you're here. Gonna take the fifth. On
I mean, before yeah. Before the beard got so gray, it was pretty red. So I got some Scotch Irish roots in me, and yeah. there is you know you can make an argument. You know that is the case. You know it's no underwear under the kilts.
I'm not against it. I yeah. listen. Hey, if you're man enough to wear a kilt, yeah. you're man enough to let it all hang out, so to speak. So we got these self-hating groups like The Athletic and other people saying, oh, the United States is terrible, awful, awful, awful. Meanwhile, everyday Europeans like this dude, Freddie from Germany, love America, and they're writing glowing stories of how amazing and awesome America is. You can check out Freddie's tweets or posts on X at Freddie LA7, FreddyLA7. And he is celebrating the United States of America. He's become a superstar. Even CNN had to refer to this whole influx of Europeans here in the United States as the cultural awakening of America. CNN had to say it, and it probably killed him to say it. But people like Freddie and others from around the world are discovering and experiencing our sports facilities, our sunsets, our beaches, our countryside, our unmatched geography, the Southern hospitality. Mm-hmm. They discovered Bucky's barbecue, Waffle House, free refills, friendly people. It's just one of the many things. But Freddie has gone famous here in the United States. Are you guys familiar with this guy?
I've heard of him. Yeah, I'm not.
Yeah, my favorite one was the what he was saying about Buc-ee's, because I'm a huge Buc-ee's fan too as well. He's like, this is actually a gas station in America. You know, like this is like the coolest place on earth. So.
It's incredible. I had never been to a Buc-ee's. I was shooting a movie in Alabama earlier, late last year, I guess, and late in 25, and I had never been.
That was your first time going.
That
to
was
Buc-ee's?
My first. We don't have them here in Vegas or in California, which is unfortunate. But I can't blame Buc-ee's for not wanting to have a Buc-ee's in California, because they will strangle you to death, Buc-ee's. So keep your businesses where they belong, and hopefully at some point in time, California can fix their whole situation. I'm not moving back, but we need a Buc-ee's there, no question about it. Did you see that J.J. Watt? So this dude Freddie was going into Houston, where I think we're having some of the World Cup games, and J.J. Watt heard about him, Patriot J.J. Watt, obviously is a first ballot Hall of Famer, unbelievable defensive end, and this is a sport I can talk about all day long. But J.J. Watt like sent him, put him in a hotel, sent him gift baskets, signed jersey, all kinds of stuff. That's just the welcoming part of America. You're going to come in and celebrate America. Mm-hmm. We're going to hug you.
Mm-hmm.
It's a beautiful, beautiful thing. Sports has a way of bringing people together, like you and your Scottish kilt friends in Boston hanging out. It's wonderful. It's the ultimate meritocracy. You cannot get on the pitch. You can't get on the field. You can't become a SEAL Team 6 operator without earning it. And you don't care. Do you care if your teammates are black, white, green, yellow, brown?
Not at all.
Japanese?
Not at all. Yeah. Again, so everyone thinking about, I love so much about sports a lot, but with the military as well, too, working
of
with
course.
You know, partners overseas, we all have the same end state. We all have the same end goal.
And it's a meritocracy. If you're good and you're solid, you move up.
Yeah.
And if you're not, you don't.
Yeah.
That's life.
It's kind of like
folks.
That on the sand, this train waits for no one. Either keep up or step off.
You heard it first from Trey Lindsay. Keep up or step off. So I love sports. I'm a huge sports fan. I played college football. I played in the NFL for about 15, 20 minutes. I got injured early and out I was. It was a bummer. But that's a big part of America and sports and life. I learned so much from playing sports. You're going to get knocked down. Mm-hmm. Someone's going to be bigger, stronger, faster. Someone's going to hit you harder or hit you when you don't see it. You get up. You clean yourself up. You dust off your pants and you get back to work, and you do it with your teammates.
Yep.
I think it's awesome. However, there are single person sports like fighting, mixed martial arts, the UFC. I watched last night the UFC at the White House lawn, and it was insane. The visuals from there, first of all, the weather cooperated, thank you God, because the Weather Channel and some other outlets were like, it's going to be awful. There's a 60% chance it's going to get rained out. It's going to kick up the mosquitoes. It's going to be Ebola and death for everyone. And it turned into those storms split. They went around Washington, D.C. It was gorgeous. The facility was unbelievable. The march out of the Oval Office, Justin Gaethje, which I will talk about. I could talk about the entire show. He was reading the Declaration of Independence, I believe, in the Oval Office before he walked out. It was a long-ass walk, too, by the way. That long walk out there to step in. It was just iconic, and it was unbelievable. I loved it. You guys didn't see the fight last night live, did you?
No, we saw the highlights of it afterwards, but...
What were you guys doing in Vegas? You couldn't watch the fight. Oh, my gosh. Oh, I don't even want to know.
We're prepping for the show today. That's what we were doing.
Okay.
We're discussing business and other things
very
like
serious.
That.
That's part of the show. It was unbelievable. My entire family came over to my house. We all watched it. We all stood for the national anthem, which was amazing.
Yeah.
I forgot who sang it, and I apologize to you, my friend, because it was awesome.
Yeah.
And it was so respectful. And the presidential band, I don't know what they're called. I think they're Marine Corps. They performed every walkout song with the band and live singing. That was amazing. There was the one girl, staff sergeant, singer woman. I forgot her name. I apologize for that. You were amazing. The whole event was a huge celebration of America, a huge celebration of sports, a huge celebration of meritocracy, and it was also President Trump's 80th birthday. Dana White, an incredible patriot. What a job you did, Dana. Mm-hmm. We're going to get Dana on the show hopefully soon, too. Amazing guy who lives here in Vegas, has been a friend of mine for decades, and he put on a heck of a show. It was awesome to see everybody celebrating America. You know, and then there's folks. Well, first of all, before we get too far into it, there was counter-programming from the left. I don't know if you guys saw this because I don't know if anybody saw this, but it was, I think it was called Rise Up, Sing Out. And I think it was only available on Disney Plus, and it was a joke. I mean, like if you could compare, if you, and you can compare the two at home. What a difference between the celebrating of America, when the Blue Angels and the Thunderbirds flew over in that formation. Oh my, the visuals were unreal. Meanwhile, you have a bunch of horrible singers. I can't sing, but I probably could have sang at the what's it called again? The Rise Up, Sing Out thing. It was terrible, just awful. And then people are poo-pooing him, the president having, you know, fighting matches, boxing matches on the White House lawn. Teddy Roosevelt actually suffered an injury, a lifelong injury to his eye. He used to have boxing matches and fights in the White House. This isn't unprecedented. We are America. We fight. We have been. We fought for our independence. We fight. But we fight for just causes.
Well, once again, it's a double standard we've talked about before. I mean, the left, once again, demonized Trump for having a UFC, you know, fights and everything else, you know, on the White House lawn. But under the Biden administration, they were totally okay with, you know, the transgender parades and things like that. And, you know, adults flashing, you know, young children as they're walking by and things like that. That's totally fine, but, you know, can't have a UFC bout.
No, it denigrates us. But the flashing of fake breasts.
Yeah.
Listen, I'm not against the flash, you know, here and there. But that was when you compare and contrast the two. It's unbelievable, and it, and people are still saying it was horrible.
Yeah.
Why?
Because it was Trump's idea.
That's it. If he cured cancer, they'd be really ticked off that he cured cancer, which is, to me, totally insane. Still staying with sports. We could do this for hours, but excuse me, the Knicks won the NBA championship. That was an early birthday gift to Trump. I think it was on Saturday. I rooted for the Spurs. I wanted the Spurs. I'm sure you did. Who did you want?
I'm rooting for the Spurs, obviously being a Texas boy, or at least marrying into the Texas family. I always give that disclaimer, but I mean, I get good on the Knicks. They played an awesome series.
They were
down double digits in almost every game. I mean, and then getting up, coming back and winning the series, you know, winning those games. And I was actually in San Antonio for game one and game two. I was there for the work I do.
The Knicks beat them in both.
0-2. Yeah.
Did any San Antonio fans beat up Knicks fans afterwards and take their jerseys off?
At least none to the point where it made national news. Unlike what happened in New York.
Oh, but, you saw that?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, did you see that at home?
I saw that as a New Yorker.
Yeah.
Are you proud of that?
No, it's embarrassing. I mean, I'm proud of the Knicks. You know,
great.
Congratulations. Great win. The tail end of their season, all through the playoffs, they were phenomenal. Yep. They deserved to win. 100% hands down. They deserve to win.
You don't think that the Spurs fans should have been beat up and had their jerseys ripped off them?
It's embarrassing as a New Yorker for that to be shown on the news. You know, in what Mondani's doing in the city right now.
I think the commie Mondani actually took credit for the Knicks win.
Of course.
He had a jersey on. I saw one.
Did he have a Knicks jersey on? No. He had some weird ass. Did he have a jersey on?
I'm not sure. But obviously he wasn't taking care of the city. NYPD is one of the greatest law enforcement agencies in the world. You know, and he's not giving them the resources. He's not allowing them to work, to do their jobs. He's got them hamstrung, and this is what happens. You know, you have kids in the streets that just young men and women who are just, you know, they're excited for the win, but at the same time, you know, they're becoming violent and they're hurting people, and they're just because of the jersey that somebody has on. You know, talk about a reverse there, right?
Yeah, the first two games of the series, I was staying in the downtown area of San Antonio, and I got a little loud, obviously, you know, horns honking and things like that. Yeah, but it wasn't bad at all.
Didn't you see the Dana White Ram commercial?
No, I've not.
They played it 37 times during the UFC. He says, "We're a loud nation. We're loud. Freedom's loud."
Yeah.
You can be loud, but did they dismantle any school buses and beat the tar? You see that school bus that they tore up?
I didn't see that
one.
They
beat the tar out of a school bus. Insanity, stupid.
It's embarrassing.
Celebrate without destroying.
I know they pulled a cabbie out in New York City and started beating him up for whatever, and destroyed the cab for no reason.
Well, we're so excited the Knicks won, we're going to just destroy stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I don't understand the logic. It doesn't make any sense, but I guess in Mondami's New York, anything can happen, which is unfortunate. It's really unfortunate. But they tried to say, because Trump came to the first game in New York in the Garden, and they lost. The Knicks lost. And they tried to say it was the Trump curse, and that's why the Knicks are going to lose the series. But guess what? The Knicks pulled it off. Brunson was unbelievable.
Oh, that guy's phenomenal.
Especially in that last game. I mean, he's unbelievable.
He's a machine.
He's a machine, yeah. and he maintains right here the whole way through. Did you see the post-game press conference where they asked him about it and stuff? And he said something to the effect of, I love New York, and I love it, and I love Texas. I love Texas. In fact, I really love Texas taxes because New York's at like 15% where they're going to tax him, and Jalen Brunson makes a lot of money. But he said, "Yeah, I like that Texas situation where you don't pay state income tax." What a concept.
Makes a difference.
Oh, my God. The people get to keep their money that they earned, and the government can't go and waste it? Insane.
I can say, though, Bronson's not going to pay for a meal or a beer in New York for a very long time.
He probably doesn't have to ever again. Yeah. And he can afford it, but he is beloved, and he put the team on his back. Yeah. Jalen Brunson, well done. Even though I was rooting against you guys, it was just unbelievable. And you have to celebrate that achievement. I mean, I don't root for Jalen Brunson and the Knicks because I was rooting for the Spurs. However, he won. It was clean and clear, and he won, and he walked away with it, and he carried the team on his back. God bless you, Jalen. Well done. Well said. It's like the Justin Gaethje. Okay, so that fight, he fought Ilia Topuria, and Topuria was a technician. Man, that guy can fight. I would never want to step across him in the ring. Justin Gaethje, they were calling him your favorite fighter's favorite fighter. Mm-hmm. That's what Daniel Cormier and Joe Rogan were saying. And what a great saying. It's your favorite fighter's favorite fighter. Everybody said that he hits harder than anybody. Well, do you see what he did to Topuria's face?
I did not.
I did see that on the highlight reel.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. It looked like he had been beaten by a New York City crowd when the Knicks won. It was unbelievable. Yeah. It was incredible. And he is – Justin Gaethje bleeds red, white, and blue that same way. So awesome. It couldn't have been better if it had been scripted, and it was not. When people talk about, like, sports are scripted, it makes me laugh because it's so ridiculous if you understand what these guys are doing. As a soccer player, I mean, you could throw a game if you're a goalie. You could allow a couple through or something like that, or you could miss things on purpose. But – maybe that's fixing a game, but there's no scripted.
No.
It's the dumbest,
team effort.
Dumbest thing I've ever heard. No scripted stuff, not in the NFL either. It just can't happen. So we've covered a lot of sports stuff because it was an incredible sports weekend, and what is more American than competing and sports. But also during this weekend, Iran.
Yeah.
Peace in the Middle East. We all want it. We've said it. Miss Universe and Miss World contestants have been talking about what would you like to achieve in your life, and they're like, peace in the Middle East. We actually have a shot at this now that we signed a memorandum of understanding with the number one state sponsor of terrorism in the world. Probably killed some of your friends and injured some of your friends, certainly did some of mine. Unbelievable that we have this possible here. The troublemakers could be done. It turns out Trump was, even during this, was moving oil out of the Strait of Hormuz the entire time, up to, I think Secretary Hegseth even said, up to 125 million barrels during that time. So that's unbelievable. He said Project Freedom never stopped, and we were getting that oil out of there. What do you guys think about this memorandum of understanding? What is your feeling on Iran?
Personally, I think it's something we needed to do. I think we might have gone a little early, personally. Obviously, we want peace. We want everything to be settled. But I think we had some more work to do, taking out some more of the higher level IRGC and Quds Force members.
You mean before signing this
memorandum?
Before
signing this memorandum. And of course, I don't know exactly who's been taken out. I'm not privy to that information. But having worked, you know, you can't trust Iranians. You cannot trust the government. You cannot trust this regime.
You can trust Iranians, but not the Iranian government.
Yes,
not
right.
The Islamic regime.
Thanks for clarifying.
Because some of my closest friends are Iranian. Yeah. I could swear like a sailor in Farsi, but I will not do that right now.
Right. You cannot trust the government. And I've seen it time and time over working sanctions cases against Iran throughout my career. You know, they would be saying one thing and doing something completely different. And the men and women of HSI and FBI and Department of Commerce who are working these sanctions cases every day, we all know. You know, they're coming to our country. They're stealing our goods. They're stealing our, you know, military technologies and bringing them back to Iran under the shadow and the guises of transshipment and whatnot. And it's still happening even today. So to think that we can trust a memorandum, we'll see. You know, I'm a little bit skeptical about that, but I think it's a great step in the right direction.
I mean, we haven't been in this situation as long as I can remember.
Right.
I do remember the Iranian hostage crisis because I'm that old. That's not, I think it was 79 that took place. I was 13 years old, so I was just sort of waking up to the world. I'm that old. I'm doing the math.
I was four.
Thank you, Mike. Thank you.
Was not born yet, so.
Oh, you really appreciate that.
Before my time.
Dang it. Getting old is something, but it's also a privilege, and it's wonderful. Your relationship and or experiences with Iran, and knowing that it's the number one state sponsor of terrorism, those I don't know what they were called exactly, those IEDs that would blast at a certain area, those things took out a lot of our
EFPs,
guys.
EFPs, explosively formed like penetrators, specifically designed to defeat U.S. armor.
And it did.
Yeah, yeah.
And
absolutely.
It was definitely from the Iranians.
100% from the Iranians. So kind of my opinion, this, Dean, put a lot of thought into it because it is very near and dear to my heart, you know, deployments, you know, in the Middle East I've done.
Well, tell our folks where you have deployed in the Middle East, just what you can say.
The normal ones that made the headlines, you know, from the GWAT, you know, so I'll just leave it at that. But okay. I was saying this.
He was other places that he can't talk. Yeah. That's what I'm reading into it.
100%.
Okay, good.
I'm cautiously optimistic.
That's how I
this.
Date. Cautious.
Yeah.
Cautious.
Again, like we definitely need to take a page from Ronald Reagan's policy, the trust but verify.
Yep.
So there's no doubt Iran will not get a nuclear weapon under the Trump administration's watch. Now, what happens after that? If a Democrat gets in office, we'll see. That's really like the wild card. But for me personally, kind of echoing what Mike's point of view, I think we might have been a little bit too early on this one, just because I think we should have killed way more members of the IRGC. Yep. I mean, we should have killed so many more of those motherfuckers before we actually signed this.
Just say what you mean. Just put it out there.
Yeah, but the American blood they have on their hands and everything else. So, I mean, that's just my personal opinion. Granted, I'm not, you know, privy to certain information. Obviously, the Trump, you know, administration is, you know, getting real time and who exactly they're talking to. But I think, again, we are a little bit premature on that. Not that a peace is always good when we can get an agreement done, but again, really, it's the old saying of the Zen master, you know, where it says, we'll see. So kind of like what happened on the end of the movie Charlie Wilson's War, when the Russians were pushed out of Afghanistan, what happened? The Taliban, you know, rose to power, and look where that ended up.
20 some odd years.
I was hoping for regime change, personally.
Well, it ain't over till it's over.
Yeah.
So it might be early on that memorandum of understanding, but I don't think anybody in the Trump administration, Secretary Hegseth, Secretary Bessent, Secretary Rubio, I don't think anybody really believes the Iranians. President Trump, I don't think, buys it for a second, but he will drive a hard bargain and he'll make sure it goes through. And we're learning more and more as time goes on about this. Like something, you know, there was a whole discussion about arming the Kurds.
Yep.
And then apparently we weren't allowed to or something. He was very unhappy with the Kurds, which was a surprise to me. Was it a surprise to you to hear something like that?
Yeah, I mean, because we've had bad experiences arming, you know, what we thought were our allies overseas. And that came back to bite us right in the rear end.
Mm-hmm.
Again, there's no doubt that the Iranians' military is completely decimated, you know, despite what the liberal media wants to say, you know, what they want to report. But again, it just goes to show you, talk about, you know, the flag, the pride, and everything else being an American. It's, again, if the U.S. military receives the approvals, the authorities, and the assets to go get a job done, like there's absolutely nothing that the U.S. military will not accomplish. And that should, like, I don't care what side of the political aisle you're on, you should feel pride in knowing that, okay, hey, if we, again, Give the men and women of the armed forces what they need and the you know, the authorities to go do it, and they will absolutely dominate any situation.
I love to hear that. In your opinion, how is Secretary Hegseth doing?
Oh, phenomenal. Absolutely phenomenal. Yeah. I mean, I never got the chance to serve under him, but like I've told folks before, could he be any worse than the last one we had? You know,
that was Lloyd Austin.
You know,
yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, like Lloyd Austin was worthless as a CENTCOM commander before he retired. So.
So how did those guys get? How did he get promoted like that? Was that under the Obama
administration? Yeah, I mean, I'm sure he would make a great neighbor. He's a nice guy, but at the same time, as far as being a leader of the military when wearing a uniform and then on the civilian side, I think he's one of the worst generals and Secretary of Defense we've ever had.
So how do you feel about it? I'm kidding. So given that, and you still probably have tons of. I'm sure you have tons of friends who are currently serving and did serve and so on and so forth. What's their feeling on what's going on right now? They're getting the resources, they're getting the OKs. I mean, we are, without a doubt, kicking ass militarily.
It's back to the warfighter is the priority, unlike the last administration with DEI and all this other nonsense was the priority. Again, the U.S. military is there for two things. You know, we should not ever be used as a social experiment. The U.S. military is there to kill enemies of this country when they need to be killed and to break things on behalf of the U.S. government and our allies to support our interests worldwide. Again, a little bit of humanitarian aid, this and that. If it's not, as long as it's not, you know, degrading military capabilities, if something, conflict did kick off, that's fine. But the U.S. military is there, again, like I said, to kill enemies of this country and break things when they need to be broken.
Kill enemies and break things. Pretty straightforward, pretty simple. I want to talk to you about, I want to ask you a couple questions about USAID and a couple things later, because that's one of the things we funded all the time, and I don't think that did us any good. And you you have good understanding about that as well?
Some experience with it, yeah.
We'll hold on to that for a second. But one of my best friends is Iranian. His family had to leave after the revolution. He was actually going to get drafted. A lot of people don't understand is that, you know, you had a birthday, and your birthday decided when you if you were going to go in or not. And my buddy, his father was doing medical work as a doctor, and he was doing some work with some of the military folks and such. And they told him, hey, don't you have a son that was born on such and such a date? And he's like, yeah. And they told him, his number's coming up.
All right.
And so he quickly moved him to Jacksonville, Florida, and he became one of my best friends. And I went to college with the Shah of Iran's son, Ali Reza Pahlavi. I've met the deposed Shah, Reza Pahlavi, a number of times. Iranian people that have moved here, the diaspora,
absolutely,
that are here in America, love that lion flag, and they love Iran. And Iran wasn't always this kind of absolute monster to the United States, and didn't come after us back in the Shah's day. So I'm really hopeful for a lasting peace and getting rid of the IRGC 100%. It's going to be hard to read them out. I think President Trump didn't bomb the infrastructure the way he could have. Obviously, we could have destroyed everything because
that would have hurt the Iranian people
more
than the actual IRGC themselves.
And the Iranian people are lovely. Mm-hmm. They're wonderful people. It's not an Islamic country. And a lot of people don't understand that. It's not an Islamic country.
Right.
Mm-hmm. The Islamists came in, took over, and they've been ruling much like the Taliban.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just awful. So here is to praying that President Trump is able to bring about lasting peace in the Middle East. I'm hopeful for it, but very skeptical. It's like my dating life. I said that earlier. I'm very hopeful, but skeptical. I don't think President Trump has the wool pulled over his eyes. I think he's trying to make a deal for the betterment of the country and that the IRGC will fall. But we'll see where that shakes out. You feel hopeful about it, optimistic, or just cautiously
optimistic? Yeah, Dean, if I can share a family-related story about how the Iranian, you know, under the Shah, the Iranian, before the Ayatollahs came in there and took things over. So I never got a chance to meet him, but my wife's grandfather, he passed away before we started dating and got married. He's a retired lieutenant colonel in the Air Force. And so this is like my mother-in-law's dad. And so he was one of only very few American pilots that, you know, were based out of Lebanon, but he would do training trips, you know, training operations, teaching the Iranian pilots how to fly. He's one of the only few American Air Force pilots that was qualified to fly every type of Iranian aircraft, whether it was one of their fighters, one of the, you know, bombers, anything that had a cargo. Like, he was qualified and cross-trained. And he actually would train the Iranian pilots. That just shows, like, we used to have a, you know, phenomenal, very close diplomatic relationship with Iran. I don't know if we'll ever get to that point, and unless the IRGC is completely wiped out and gone again. But time will only tell.
Can you imagine what the world stage would look like if we did have a lasting peace with Iran and it stopped being this violent Islamic Republic that wants to screw everything up in the Middle East? They fund the Houthis in Yemen. Yep. They fund Hezbollah in Lebanon. They funded October 7th. They fund Hamas. If all that was dried up, and I think President Trump is drying that up right now to a tremendous degree, can you imagine what can happen? And they're really tight with Israel, and suddenly that would be incredible for the world.
Yeah.
It would be prosperity for everybody.
Right. They would open up the world's economy, I think, you know, and then China would really have, if we were allies with Iran, China would really have something to worry about, I think.
Yeah.
Hoping and praying that President Trump is playing 3D chess, as he seems to have been doing over his entire second presidency. 47 is no offense to 45, but 47 is kicking ass and taking names.
I was going to say 45, just you don't know what you don't know. Being like a Washington outsider, getting in there and seeing how the political game actually works in the D.C. Beltway. Again, so much of improvement from 47 over 45. Again, you don't know what you don't know.
You don't know what you don't know. Well, here's what I do know. The stock market is at an all-time high, and Elon Musk is a trillionaire. Can we celebrate that?
Absolutely. I love the left jumping out complaining that he's a trillionaire and that he should be, you know, more heavily taxed. It's insane. Like, he's bringing so many jobs to the American people. He's bringing hope and, you know, who doesn't love Tesla? It's a great company.
I drove one here. Drove me here.
So it's again, going back to, they'll cut off their noses despite their face. Yeah. Whatever Trump supports, it they have to be against it. It's just craziness.
Think about how many millionaires that Elon made.
Right.
You know, from the IPO and everything.
Over 4,000 within his own company. And we're talking about welders. We're talking janitors, the lunch
lady. Again, talking about the hypocrisy. I think it was Senator Elizabeth Warren was talking about, demonizing Elon Musk for becoming a trillionaire. But again, she doesn't talk about how many millionaires he made as well, too. You know how many millionaires that, she has made? One herself.
Yes, sir. Absolutely. Same thing with Bernie Sanders.
Oh, yeah.
It's the same bunch. I mean, I think that we've gotten away from, and it was a weird thing because I dated a girl from the UK, and she said something about, she's like, you Americans, you always think you're going to win. You're willing to do whatever it takes to win, and but you expect to win. And the UK, if someone does really well, they tear them down.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that's the Elizabeth Warren thought process. That's the Bernie Sanders thought process. You've done more than me. You've been more successful. Give me some of your stuff.
Yep.
That's insane. That is totally against the United States.
Not a capitalist society. There's nobody. Nobody will want to work or try to get ahead. It's
why would you?
Basic of capitalism. Basically.
I spent some time on the internet, and I was looking at something, and there was a guy interviewing people, and he was talking to them about he was a very wealthy guy, and he was like, at what point in time should we be taxed? A tremendous amount or whatever, or 70% or whatever. And the guy was like, anything you make over $2 million should be taxed at like 75%. And he said, okay, well then here's what I would do with my company.
I saw
once we made $2 million, I would furlough all my employees. I would stop doing anything because I'm not working for the government for 25 cents on the dollar. Mm-hmm. That's capitalism. That's why it's raised more people out of poverty than any other economic system in the history of mankind.
Absolutely.
Capitalism kicks ass.
And the guy that was interviewing him was just stood there. He didn't have a comment. There was nothing he could say to that. He's like, oh, that means we would all lose our jobs. Why would we do,
Well, look what's going on in Seattle. Look at the mayor of Seattle, that absolute child who lived in her mom's basement until she became that. She's running all the businesses out. Yeah. I think Texas just became the took over for Fortune 500 companies. I think it just took over the leader board, if you will. More companies are based out of Texas than New York. Because why?
Taxes, regulation. I mean, the free market enterprise. I mean, we could do a whole podcast just on that alone, that topic right there.
Well, because they're murdering innovation. Has anybody been as innovative as Elon Musk?
No.
No. So does he deserve to be a trillionaire?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Hell yes, he does. Yeah. And I think we should emulate and want to be like Elon Musk. I want my son to aspire to be that successful, that innovative. Jeff Bezos changed the face of commerce. Congratulations, Jeff. I don't agree with all your policies politically, but as a fellow Princetonian, 2 years behind him, well done. And you deserve it. And God bless, man. Well done. That's fantastic. Also, the funny thing is Canada. So I guess Elon Musk is worth more than the country of Canada now, or he's richer than Canada. But what's funny is he should buy it. He should tell Jeff Bezos, put it in my cart.
Yeah.
Okay, I didn't make that one up. I saw someone do that on the internet. I thought it was hysterical, but it's very funny. Add it to my cart. But it's brilliant. But he also made a lot of Canadians a lot of money.
Absolutely.
Because a lot of their investments, I don't know what they call them in Canada, but their retirement funds and all those other things were invested in SpaceX, and bingo. You've just made, 17 million, billion, I don't know what he made, but a huge number for those people. And it's weird to see them, like Tim Walz. Remember when Tesla's stock has dropped to like 250? It's gone bananas since then. Sorry, Tim Walz.
Tampon Tim.
Yeah, I mean, he was rooting for the failure of a company because he didn't like the individual doing it, or even the things he stood for.
Did you ever see the report on that? Actually, the Minnesota, public pension fund, the amount of stock it had in there. So basically, Tim Walz was rooting against his own citizens that have worked for the state for X amount of years, they built up in retirement. He was basically rooting for them to lose money.
Which is insane. It's the same thing that was happening in Canada. And again, they're invested in SpaceX. So God bless you, Elon Musk. Thank you for buying X. Thank you for SpaceX, for Tesla, for Neuralink, for the Boring Company here. He is such an innovator. Keep innovating. And he's not sitting around with $1 trillion in his closet or in his bank account liquid. He's invested in these companies.
Right.
He invests his money. When he sold PayPal, He put almost all the money in Tesla and I think SpaceX. Yeah. I mean, he is the example that we should all aspire to be like. I think it's phenomenal. Congratulations. And I am buying some SpaceX stock as soon as I can. I told my stock guy, I was like, hey, buy SpaceX. He didn't answer. Dave, why didn't you answer me back? Why didn't you say, yes, we're
just
buying SpaceX?
Wait for
SpaceX.
The little dip, but you exactly, might never get one.
Yeah, exactly. One. It's like a game in that. But again, that's, you know, socialism always talks about, oh, the employees can own the means of production. And that's kind of where they want to get to. Well, guess what? Socialists, you can own the means of production by investing in your companies. That's what Elon Musk did by allowing his employees to have stock in Tesla, and Tesla, SpaceX, everything. And now you guys are all millionaires. So there was this one guy, I saw him. He was an immigrant, a legal immigrant from, I think, from Mexico. He came in and was a welder for 10 years, and his stock turned into worth just under $1 million.
Great.
Bless you. That's the American dream, and that's what we all hope for.
Then we got up in New York, we have Governor Hochul, who's begging millionaires to come back to her state. Mm-hmm. She doesn't realize what the problem here, what the cause of this problem is, but now she wants them to all come back from Florida and try to incentivize people. And we're like, we just left your state for, you know, certain reasons. We're not coming back.
And we told you we were going to leave. Right. And what did she say? Bye.
Yeah, bye. And now she changed their tune because she doesn't have the tax base now to pay what she wants to do.
It's pretty simple. That's why California's lost so much business as well. And you Texans have gained it all. And and New York and has lost to Florida. And it's just incredible. It's clear what's going on. And hopefully people will be able to see that fraud and that abuse and that waste and that ridiculousness that goes through New York, et cetera, and they won't keep electing. Don't keep electing these people who don't have your best interests in mind, and they really do not. I don't believe for a second that Zoran Mamdani or Mikey Sherrill in New Jersey or Kathy Hochul in New York have the best interest of their people, their citizens in mind. When you dox that very wealthy gentleman in New York who had a second place there, who pulled his money out, pulled his business out, you're cutting off your nose to spite your face, and it's disgusting. Mm-hmm. So hopefully people are going to learn from that. We are entering the golden age, gentlemen. But as we are entering the golden age, California is still cheating in their elections. That's my opinion. I hold to it. I left there 3 years ago. I believe I probably voted. Somebody voted for me in this last election. I bet. I don't know how to check that. It's crazy what happened. Spencer Pratt was in second place on the day of election voting, solidly. Nithya Raman, no one had ever heard of. A Democratic Socialist of America, DSA candidate, and I'm not a fan of the DSA, was a distant third, cried, sort of gave a concession speech, and then magically passes Spencer Pratt when all the mail-in ballots come in. And she was
the old ballot dump.
Oh, the old ballot dump, and especially out of the homeless areas, which she runs like homeless programs and things like as a councilwoman in that Skid Row area where she received, I think, like, you know, 43,000 votes or something like that. Yeah. When it's insane. And we have 43,000 homeless there. Spencer Pratt pointed that out. But maybe some sunlight in California will help. Steve Hilton did advance in the governor's race, which is wonderful. And hopefully the Supreme Court's going to hear a case about election day voting, and we can make it election day, not election 5 weeks as it currently sits in California. Mm-hmm. I don't know. What do you think? You think that without any, everyone always says, and the argument against it is always, well, there's no widespread voter fraud, or there hasn't been a lot of prosecutions for it. Mm-hmm. Just sitting there from the outside as a guy who lives in Texas and travels the world all the time, does it seem on the up and up to you?
No. Look at perfect examples. Look at the 2020 election. So you have what Barack Obama got, was it 60 some odd million votes? And all of a sudden, Joe Biden got, was it 81 million?
81 million plus.
Kamala was back down to the old 60 some odd million. Again, all the, and again, it's a lot of even Republican states that were to blame for that one. Their legislative members, because they kind of changed the rules from COVID.
Of course.
During COVID. So once that's tightened back up, you know, the midterms last year, or sorry, 2 years ago, or sorry, 4 years ago now. Time's flying.
It happens. Tell you,
yeah, but even the presidential election 2 years ago, we didn't have nearly the, there might have been some fraud, but not nearly as much as there was in 2020.
Yeah. And does it look like it's on the up and up to you, Mike?
I think it's getting better. I don't know, step by step. right? Yeah, I mean, 2020 is a great example of that, and the spike in the number of votes. It's, so I'm not privy to all that information, obviously, and what exactly they're doing, but yeah.
But does this pass the sniff test?
No, absolutely not. For everyday Americans, I know everyday New Yorkers are just fed up with all of this.
There's no secret an election is coming up. There is no excuse for not getting, if you even have a mail-in ballot for whatever reason, you have, you know, right to do so, or however the, you know, the state or area you live in, you know, does their voting. There's no reason why it should not literally be mailed in at a minimum by the day of. So we can like have like, you know, true and fair elections and actually like decide which candidate wins, be able to have like a, you know, an accurate count by the time the polls close, but later on that night. It's not that difficult.
It
really isn't.
Every other country on the planet has ID, and they get their results in the night of.
Yeah. We want to have IDs and driver's license for illegal aliens in this country, right? But we don't want to have people bring an ID. I
don't necessarily want illegal aliens to have driver's license and IDs myself.
They're getting them.
The left wants that.
Yeah.
So they can cheat.
Right.
I mean, what other reason is that? I've had a home in Spain for 25 years. I don't have a Spanish driver's license. They recognize the American driver's license, but I didn't pass the Spanish driver's license test. I don't vote in their elections. I follow the rules. Why should it be different here?
I truly believe that if Trump wasn't elected in this last election, there would have been a massive amnesty.
Yep.
And we'd be fucked as a nation. Yeah. Among other things.
Irreparable damage.
If Trump wasn't elected and they would have had an amnesty, I saw it coming, you know, being a lifetime immigration, homeland security guy, we saw it coming and it would have happened.
And it was looking ugly as hell. Thank you again, President Trump. And I love this cabinet. I think Secretary Bessent, you are an all-star, sir. Mm-hmm. I can't wait to have him on the homeland and talk to him. Those economic sanctions in Iran and elsewhere, and all the terrorism thing, that's unbelievable.
Yeah.
That's an area of your expertise.
Yeah, with the OFAC, you know, we enforced OFAC laws. And
what is OFAC for those of us who don't know?
It's a Department of Treasury Department, Office of Foreign Asset Controls, and it's basically our power over these types of countries to shut down their financial systems or shut down transactions going into and out of that country. When we see a country like Iran who's, you know, attempting to get a weapon, we can basically harm them and hurt them as a country or as a, you know, administration by putting these sanctions out and not letting things be sent into that country, which were, you know, weapons, money, all of that type of thing. So OFAC's a great agency, and it's a tremendous asset to the United States.
And Secretary Bessent, he said it specifically about Iran.
Yeah.
He was like, you know, look, we're shutting down that stuff. All those leaders are running out trying to get their money out in crypto, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. I don't understand crypto to the nth degree. I know some of the folks here in the studio do, but crypto is not traceable. Is that, or is it not hard to trace?
It's becoming more and more easier to trace, but I'm not an expert on it, but it's definitely a way that terrorist networks and organizations can move money around this world. Also, nefarious actors in different countries. We're seeing it in the Caribbean, where these, you know, leaders of these countries are going to crypto to move money around instead of using the U.S. banking system to protect themselves and insulate themselves and still, you know, enrich themselves.
Mm-hmm. Oh, the Caribbean.
Yep.
We've got a lot to
say
about
that.
The Caribbean.
We'll get to that.
For sure. We're going to expose a lot of fraud and such in the Caribbean. So you at home, pay attention to that. That's going to be eye-opening, to say the least, the amount of knowledge that is running through here. Not me, but these guys. It's pretty unbelievable. So California, we'll see what happens there. I like the fact that that there's a lot of light being shined in California on this, because it's so blatant and it's so obvious. I'm hoping that and the Supreme Court can help turn that around. And I'd love to see us expose or pass the SAVE Act.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That would make great sense, where our elections could be as secure as other countries, which is a weird thing to say as a United States citizen, that I hope our elections can be as secure as like France or someplace like that. It's shocking. It should not be the case. Biolabs in Ukraine, that just came out too. Did you see that?
I haven't seen that.
Okay,
one.
So the Office of the Director of National Intelligence came out, and Tulsi Gabbard said that, you know, yeah, we funded over 120 biolabs throughout the world. In Ukraine, a bunch of them, there was talks about this. I think people got banned off of Twitter back at the time for talking about it. I mean, biolabs. We just went through COVID. That was a biolab that Fauci and others funded and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
That things are coming out under this administration. And fraud is a huge thing. You've dealt with financial fraud forever.
Sure.
And the things that they're exposing are shocking. Specifically for me that I've seen, well, you just domestically, Medicaid fraud. Nick Shirley, you are a hero, a 23-year-old kid now, he's probably 24, you know, out there exposing this stuff with an iPhone and a one camera guy. And it's unbelievable what they've uncovered. We've allowed this in our system.
Yeah.
Were you guys aware at HSI that this was going on to some degree or whatever you can say?
We were aware that fraud is, you know, rampant in this country for sure. But finding it like Nick Shirley did, I mean, it was a beautifully crafted method that he did. Did you see he was on, I think, Sean Ryan? They want to send him down to South America now and start exposing fraud down there. I don't know if you saw that. I'm a big fan of Sean Ryan's politics.
I've seen some things come out of Sean that I didn't agree with, but bless him, he's entitled to his opinion.
Absolutely.
Nick Shirley goes down to Latin America or South America. He's going to have to take you with him.
That's right? what they said.
A little bit more of a personal, security detail with him.
That's exactly what he said. He was like, "Oh, if I can get you a team, will you go?" And Nick Shirley's like, "Absolutely, let's do it."
I believe Sean Ryan, even if I don't agree with some of his politics, would do a good job with that.
He's a Navy SEAL.
Navy SEAL guy like you.
Yep.
The whole deal. USAID.
Yeah.
USAID shut down. Act Blue getting looked at. UNRWA over in Hamas. These things we funded this stuff.
Yeah. USAID was just a big hole of an organization that was just used to funnel money and launder money through. Right. So they did have some good policies, some good things they were doing.
What percentage would you say would be their good stuff?
Oh, I don't know if I
just ballpark
it. In a 10 to 20,
that's
maybe.
What I think as an outsider.
Yeah. And I knew, you know, a lot of people that worked for them and stuff. And there's some great people, hard workers, you know, humanitarian. People want to really make a difference in the world. Which, you know, I respect, and that's great. But,
that's great.
You know, politicians under, the Biden administration and other administrations were using it as a dumping ground for pork barrel spending. And they would create these programs in foreign countries and spend, tens of millions of dollars, which would never really get spent. It was just a hole that they would just throw the money into, and then it would come back to other programs here in the U.S., or it would fund somebody's job or somebody's programs for a year. And it was like a buddy system. I don't go down this hole too far, but
But it's disgusting.
Yeah, it's awful. It's American taxpayer
getting ripped
dollars.
Off.
Yeah, for sure.
And that it being used for things that we would never agree to.
Yep.
And we could probably do 17 shows.
Yeah.
Just on that. That's insane to me. Insane. Good. UNRWA is getting exposed more and more. All those terrorists on October 7th. Over 100 of them have been confirmed to be. Hamas terrorists that were UNRWA workers. They were their press. I mean, as a Navy SEAL who would be there for security and or offensive operations in situations like that, you see someone in their press thing, but you know they're not press, or you can see what they're doing. How frustrating would that be? Your rules of engagement, which probably have changed under this administration, would limit you to an nth degree, but you know who the bad guy. I was in Iraq in 2005 visiting our troops saying, "Thank you guys." And I was shocked at the there were a number of people on base that were Iraqi and so on and so forth. And I remember a guy eye banging me. And I was talking to the commanding officer of that forward operating base. And I'm like, "That guy's eye fucking me right now. He's a bad guy. Is he not?" He goes, "Yep, he's definitely a bad guy. We have to train to look at this, but he's on here selling stuff at his Haji shop and blah, 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 blah." But you see him,
all the time.
And you can't
beyond frustrating. They said intel drives operations, but even if we know the intel, sometimes we don't get talk about the approvals and authorities and the assets to actually conduct that operation. Unfortunately,
how frustrating.
Beyond frustrating. Yeah, especially being over there, even where bad guys are at, but they might be on a no hit list, because they have a other government agencies may have competing interests.
Other three letter agencies.
We saw that happen more than once, but hey,
that's got to be frustrating. And you watch a movie that, or a show like Taylor Sheridan would do, and some hotshot like you would just finally have enough and just have to waste somebody. And that's just in the movies and the TV shows. I'm sure it never, ever happens in real life. Trey got real quiet. What's going on here? It's amazing, amazing, amazing stuff. Well, we're going to wrap it up here. I could do this for hours with you guys now because there's so much going on. But the Homeland is heading back to Washington, D.C. If you were watching, if you've been watching the show, we were there. We spoke to Acting Attorney General Todd Blanche, who hopefully now will become the Attorney General. He's done such a great job in a short period of time, and he did give a lot of that credit to the work that Pam Bondi did before him. But he's been able to come in there and really get some things moving. We had counterterrorism expert and the head of counterterrorism for the United States, Dr. Sebastian Gorka, on with us too. We talked about a lot of very interesting stuff. We've had some great people. So we're going to get some fantastic interviews from D.C. I'll be on the main stage at the Great American State Fair, I think on the 27th, right after a flyover.
Awesome.
It's awesome.
Yeah.
And the stuff we're going to see celebrating America, continuing to celebrate America as we move toward our 250th birthday, and hopefully the golden age of America. We're very excited to get out there to Washington, D.C., to bring you some interviews with lots of folks from the cabinet, and to celebrate this absolutely amazing country. We thank you for watching, and we'll be back next time with more on the Homeland.